Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. I'm Jennifer English, sitting in for the incomparable Max Tucci. Meta Max Tucci is what we call him in the metaverse, where we spend a lot of time together. He's on a gorgeous summer vacation that is well-deserved. He's revisiting the sources of all his brilliance. He asked me if I would sit in for him and host the show while he was away. It was one of the great honors of my life. I've been a guest on the show, and I could literally spend every day in a studio or on the radio or in company with or in the kitchen with Max Tucci. He, of course, is brilliant. He's the host of Max and Friends. And he inspired me to reach out to friends of mine who, in the spirit of what Max and Friends usually visits, have talent and extraordinary gifts, humanity, talent, success, spirit, essence. So I thought about it and thought about it. And of course, we're in the middle of the baseball season. And next week, we're going to have the Field of Dreams game in Iowa at Field of Dreams. You know, sort of like what they've done with the National Hockey League, having one game a year in the outdoors. Pond hockey, most of the guys that play grew up playing pond hockey. So there's something very evocative and retro about that. So baseball decided that the movie Field of Dreams was such a powerful and emotional and connective film about baseball that once a year they would go, and they would go to Iowa. Just like the movie said, they'll come to Iowa City and they'll come all the way to our farm, see, and they won't know why. You know, if you build it, they will come. And then I got to thinking about it. I'm a big baseball fan myself, but beyond that, I love what baseball gives me and represents and the connection and the emotion. So I started thinking about that. If you build it, they will come. Every single artist I know has that moment. If you build it, they will come. What is it that they have? What is that calling? What is that moment when they relent to that calling? What is it when any of us get a message, when we get an inspiration, when we get clarity about where we're going to go? And then what does it take for us to yield to that, to give into it, to lean into it, to acquiesce? That moment of creative impulse, where the idea goes from being a dream to being a drawing. It can be anything. It could be a pasta dish. It could be the way you design the things you wear and the world you live in. So I got to thinking about creativity, and I got to be inspired by Field of Dreams, and I thought of my friend, the incomparable artist, J.J. Weinberg. J.J. Weinberg has had one hell of a season, as they say. He's had a really good year at the plate and in the field. His work is renowned. He's trained classically, and we'll talk a little bit more about where he came to the world of art. But at NFT NYC in 2021, he was named Best Traditional Artist turned NFT Artist. We love that for him because he has done an awful lot in the Web3 metaverse, blockchain-based community that is growing up all around us. He's my friend. He joins us from his well-lit studio in the inspiring part of the country he calls home, in his studio where he makes and paints, creates, and shares his inspiration. Right now, he's working on an incredible book but he's also just about to have another round of celebrations for his amazing piece of work that ended up on television and on SportsCenter and in news outlets across the world for its poignancy and its power. With humor and grace and talent, he paints and he draws and he brings ideas and emotions to life. He's my friend, J.J. Weinberg, and he joins us on Max and Friends tonight. J.J., how are you?
I'm absolutely humbled at that amazing introduction. I hope I can live up to all of your powerful words. Thank you.
They were the gift you gave me to introduce you with, so they're all yours, my friend. Let's talk a little bit about when you discovered your gift.
When I discovered my gift, I was probably about 8 years old the first time. I remember someone looking over my shoulder and saying, "Oh my God, you drew that? That's awesome." And that was it. That set me on a course for being in this conversation with you without a shadow of a doubt. I was in the fifth grade, probably about 10 years old, when I told my mom that I was going to go to the American Academy of Art in Chicago. And there's never been a day looking back where I haven't been, a creative.
Well, how do you explain to people that you knew how to draw that thing that somebody looked over your shoulder to see?
I think at that time, my older sister had, she had friends and stuff that were drawing, and I was looking up to her. Actually, there's this, it's crazy. I just sent this picture. It's a photograph, and I'm so glad I was able to find it. I just sent it to reporter Jerry Davich, the Chicago Tribune, because he's doing an article on this Field of Dreams piece. And the photo is me and my younger brother and my older sister. I was probably about 8 years old, we're sitting in my dad's bar room, and in the room there are these like life-size mural of the Cubs painted, like they're playing a game. Sandberg's at bat. He had just hit the ball, because you can see the back of his jersey, the 23. And I remember then, even when I was a kid, because in our bedroom, the same artist had painted Hulk Hogan and Iron Sheik. So it's like we had this WWF stuff up in our bedroom, but they were like larger than life. And wow. You know, I just, those, like, that was part of, informing me to be an artist. I remember looking at those and like, I want to be able to do that someday. I want to do that. And it's like, now that I painted that painting, of the Cubs and the journey it took me on, like, it's just, it's crazy to think that, you know, Ryan Sandberg's there on that painting in the bar room. And I painted a painting of Ryan Sandberg and was able to do a charity event with him. And he signed the piece and we auctioned it off for charity. So it's just, it's incredible how, when we tell ourselves a story, the power we have to manifest it, especially when we repeat it and it becomes like a mantra.
I want to make sure that we give you the room to introduce yourself as an artist, to the audience who's meeting you for the first time. And you've got to understand, this is Max Tucci's audience, and they love art. And this is a very knowledgeable and very passionate group of people that have all coalesced, drawn to the light that Max shines. Can you talk a little bit about the kind of work you do?
Sure. So the funny thing is, when I was young, back to, you know, telling my mom I'm going to go to the American Academy of Art, when I went into middle school, where I went to school, we only had one elective that we could choose, like the one thing that we class we would take. And I actually chose band over art, even though I knew I was going to be going to art school. That was my whole thing. But where I grew up, the football team was not good. The basketball team sucked. And so, like, the cool thing, ironically, was to be in band, because the marching band would go to state. And so my older sister was what they called a red stepper. She was like a flag girl in the band. So I wound up going into band class. And then when I went to art school, I ended up actually making music. And a lot of people don't know this, but for the longest time, I was, you know, a singer, songwriter, and performer, playing, and as far as Chicago goes, like headlining the House of Blues, Cubby Bear, the Metro, all of the classic, like, big venues in Chicago. You know, I played on stages that I've seen some of, like, my favorite artists play on. So, you know, that was an incredible experience. And I had a run with the music, you know, some viral things and fun stuff like that. But, and so the songwriter is still in me, and the words are in me always, which is kind of part and parcel to why I'm writing the book. But my art is like, you know, it was the same with my music. There's kind of like a double-edged sword, where the notion that I don't box myself in ends up, you know, it can be harder to get traction that way, I guess is the best way to put it. So some of my work is irreverent and ridiculous and parody and humoristic. Some of it is sports art, you know, and then there's, like, I have some really heavy social political commentary that, you know, it's just stuff that I've got a fire and a passion about. So it really runs the gamut. But the main, I guess, the underlying current of it is that I just feel like, as a creative person, I'm supposed to bring everything I can to my legacy. And, you know, if it doesn't make sense until all the dust is settled and I'm gone, and, you know, there's that posthumous exploration of the body of my work, and so be it. But for me, I just have to chase down that still small voice that, you know, the whisper that Ray Kinsella heard when he said, you know, if you build it, they will come. That's the same reason I did the painting. I just listen to that whisper and I follow it. And sometimes it takes me down crazy rabbit holes.
John Ruskin writes, describing you and your work, irreverent, intelligent, mischievous, nothing short of visual literature. J.J. Weinberg is Mark Twain with a paintbrush. What a great quote. And when you talk about the humor and both the irony and the satire and the humanity and the whimsy and the sharp wit, all together. I mean, there's almost no better way to say it. Mark Twain with a paintbrush. I love that. One of the prizes that you were nominated for early in your career was you were nominated for the Kennedy Center Citizen Artist Fellow Award in 2016, among many other prizes. In all the work that you do and have done, you've been an enormously successful. We're in this moment in time on the cusp of Web3, where everyone is thinking about the metaverse and blockchain and digital things, and you've been enormously successful in that realm of NFTs and digital art, et cetera. And yet there's something about the way this moment in time and the project that has brought us to this conversation today, which is called Field of Dreams, was a project that was really intended to have an existence, but it's really taken on a legendary life. Can you talk a little bit about Field of Dreams? I think we've had a disconnect. What we're going to do is we're going to play a little bit of music. We're going to solve our technical issues. And when we come back, more Max and Friends on LA Talk Radio. I'm Jennifer English, standing in sitting in for Max Tucci while he's on a very well-deserved vacation. We'll be back with more right after this.
Hi, you've reached the voicemail of J.J. Weinberg. I'm...
We have a real treat. We've got a clip of the original Harry Carey, the voice of the Chicago Cubs, singing one of the most iconic baseball tunes of all time. The seventh inning stretch. We're going to take our seventh inning stretch in the third inning, but we're going to play a little Harry Carey, Take Me Out to the Ball Game for you right now.
On to the bottom of the seventh. The Cubs are leading 4-3. All right. Let me hear you. Hi, Gary Presley. The last time at home this year. Everybody.
Okay, that's fantastic. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer English, sitting in for Max Tucci, for Max and Friends. We play that for our guest of honor this hour. His name is J.J. Weinberg. He's an acclaimed artist, nominated for the Kennedy Center Fellow, as well as being named the best artist at NFT NYC in New York City this past summer. It's thrilling to have him here with us. His work, called Field of Dreams, shares the name with the title of a movie that's one of my favorites. Most people have seen it. It's certainly a cultural icon. So when we talk about it, I feel like we're not leaving people who aren't sports movie fans out of the picture. There's something about it that really eclipses any sport to speak to humanity. And of course, that's exactly what JJ captured in his work. And then the story of this piece has had its own second life. So, J.J. Weinberg, welcome back.
Thank you. Sorry, I don't know what happened there. I dropped my call, but it's funny that you played Harry Carey there, too, because obviously he was a huge part of growing up in my household. And I did actually do a painting of Harry Carey after I'd done the one for my dad. I wound up, and it was on SportsCenter's Top Plays, like, I started doing all this charity work for the Cubs. The players were doing different things, the owner. And I did an event at Harry Carey's restaurant in Chicago. And I had this 30x40 painting. It's half of Harry Carey's face and his iconic, enormous glasses. And I have the ring, the championship ring reflecting in his glasses. And it's the title of the piece is Reflections. Because, you know, Harry wasn't there to see it, but it's like I thought this is what it would have looked like in his eye, you know, kind of reflecting in the glasses. So it's one of my favorites that I did.
Yeah, it's such a cool piece. And you can see it if you go to jjweinberg.com/shop in the Cubs collection. It's extraordinary. Let's go and talk about Field of Dreams and that piece and what's been happening. What does the piece capture?
Really, I feel like it feels like it's a totem to dreams itself, but for me, like forgiveness and love the whole experience that like I've had with my dad in the past. I mean, it's crazy to think of 2016, you know, we're in like 6 years now. And since then, our relationship has turned into something that I never would have guessed. So it really just has, it kind of holds its own magic, and it's showing me all this serendipity and the way that life can just draw these things back in. It's really something spectacular.
So what does the image capture?
Well, so there's that moment right at the end, the World Series, and the guys are jumping up and you know, it's like when I saw it, I just knew that's when I saw that moment frozen in time. I'm like, I have to paint that for my dad. And I think it captures the essence of all of this weight, you know, and I mean the weight, like the waiting for a moment. Cubs are the lovable losers for 108 years, and then all of a sudden.
Well, I was gonna say, I think it bears commenting that the Cubs, the Chicago Cubs, won the World Series in baseball in 1908, and did not win again until 2016. And the moment that you painted was the moment that they won for the first time in 108 years.
Well, it's like you said too, the notion of Field of Dreams not being just a sports movie. I think the moment with the Cubs winning and this painting for me and the NFT that I've created for it now, it means more than it's beyond the sports. It's the story, it's the lives that are affected and the families and all those things. Cause I'm not a huge sports person. I mean, my family, my dad is, my brother is, my dad could run down the stats of every Cubs player that's ever existed. I'm talking minor league to majors. It's ridiculous. But for me, it's just like, I mean, we're going to Wrigley tomorrow, actually. As long as it doesn't get rained out, we're going to a night game in the bleachers. So my brother lives downtown still, and we're going in to kind of celebrate his anniversary too. And so it's going to be awesome, but it's like, for me, it's not about the sports, you know, it's just about the belief in something bigger.
What is it about the human emotion that sports elicits from us that is so powerful and defining in many people's lives? And is it the emotion that you're painting more than anything else, the humanity?
Yeah. No, I think the emotion, it's funny because we attach so much to these teams, right? They're our teams. They're us. We say us. We won. Right? Like, no, we didn't win, they won, but we feel like we won. So there's something in it that's the way that we transfer, like the transference of our own spirit. Like we put ourselves on the field. Same way we do a film though, right? We watch a movie and we become Rocky. You know, we're in the ring. That's what I think great art does. And so in that way, sports are art. I never thought about it really like that until now, but you know, obviously I'm painting sports, but I tell people all the time, I said, with the Cubs work that I did for the most part, like, I don't feel like that was my art. That was sports memorabilia done by an artist. With the exception of the Field of Dreams painting and, my Harry Carrion, I think, because I had so much that I had to put into those, like from my own story. And the meaning behind it. Oh, actually, in the one I did for my brother, that one too, because that one has a huge story behind it. The Rocky and Rizzo and piece I did for my brother as well. There, you can see all these on my website. But But yeah, there's something about sports. Like, we were born into these families. Like, I was born a Cubs fan. I didn't really have any other choice. You know what I mean? Because my family is Cubs fans.
Wow.
So it's part of our identity, I guess.
You know, I grew up in Boston, and as a young person, I got to spend a good deal of time at Fenway Park. And there's something very special about Wrigley Field. There's something equally special about Fenway Park. They are still, relatively speaking, the older stadiums, right? But there's a lot of magic at both places. Fenway has all kinds of angles and curiosities about it. And I am old enough to remember when they turned the lights on at Wrigley. They didn't used to have night games. And this is recent memory. This is not 100 years ago.
Right.
So they were the last team to play night games. And they put it off for a while because of what they make and create in the space that is sacred space for them. I want to segue to the idea of sacred space. This coming weekend, the Cubs are going to be playing a baseball game in Iowa at Field of Dreams, the location where they built a baseball field in the middle of the corn that grows in Iowa. And if you haven't seen the movie, I'll urge you to see it. Sacred space. When you're in Iowa and you're a corn farmer, the cornfields are your sacred space. If you're a baseball fan and you grew up in Los Angeles, maybe Chavez Ravine is your sacred space. Or if you're from Boston, you go to Fenway Park or the Public Gardens, or you go to Boston Harbor and you see old Ironsides. Or you're from Chicago and you have some place like Wrigley Field, where up until, you know, not that long ago, real people went to real day games because that's what that culture created. But in all of those examples, we're given the opportunity to define and claim our sense of sacred space. Things happen there. Emotions are felt there. They're cultivated and conjured there. People have experiences there. They connect there. I want to talk about the idea of sacred space because, as far as I'm concerned, you as an artist, you have to enter sacred space to paint, is what I believe. And I'm really curious to know what your thoughts are about sacred space.
Yeah. There's a series I've been working on, and you can see some of this on my site too, Well-Regulated Militia. And there's a painting in particular of Frederick Douglass that I've been working on for about 6 years now. And, you know, when I say that, this is a perfect setup for that, because people say, how can you paint that for 6 years? Like, what do you mean? Well, I have to enter the sacred space whenever I'm going to paint on that painting. There are some things that I can just, you know, if it's an ill, you can kind of phone it in, I guess, as they say, right? But that painting, I literally have to be prepared on a soul level to show up to the work. Like, the entire time that I've worked on this piece, I've listened through Audible. I've listened through different Frederick Douglass books as well. So it's like the first one I listened to was David Blight's Prophet of Freedom. And it's, you know, a biography of Frederick Douglass. And then I listened to, you know, Life and Times of Frederick Douglass. And when I'm listening to Life and Times of Frederick Douglass, I hear a voice actor playing Frederick Douglass, speaking in my ear, speaking Frederick Douglass's words and experience. And I'm looking into his eyes and painting this just magnificent American hero. And sometimes it just shakes me too much, so I gotta take a break. But there's no doubt that especially when I get into my most serious work, I have to be in a sacred space. And I don't want to make that too, I wouldn't want to make that too cliche or like say that, you know, because at the end of the day, you have to show up to work. If you're a professional and you're an artist, there's that whole thing of, well, I wasn't feeling like it. And I don't believe in that either. You know what I mean? Because a lot of times we don't feel like it. The book that I'm writing, I've dedicated to write at least a page a day right now. And there are days that I, you know, I don't, not that I don't even feel like writing, but like I might have a headache at the time I'm trying to write. I didn't eat, a lot of stuff going on in the day, X, Y, Z. And then I'm like, I got to still write. But, you know, showing up to the work is what separates the professional from the hobbyist. And so I guess it's a little bit of a dichotomy there, because like I said, with the Frederick Douglass paintings and those, I feel like I have to be prepared, but then at the same time, that can be an excuse. So maybe that's why it's taking 6 years too. But needless to say, it's definitely legacy work. And for me, if it takes me 16 years to paint, that's okay, because it's just something that I have to leave as part of my statement for being here.
That feels incredibly powerful. And I can imagine that some days it's as hard to write one word as it is to write 100 pages. And there are some days that if you can squeeze out one page, you might as well get 100.
Right. You know,
there's some things about that. When you went to art school and in your lifetime making acquaintance with and then peace with the gift that you've been given, that's part of the reason you exist, can you talk about learning about what it takes and still forging ahead? No one thinks it's easy. And for most people, it's downright impossible. But there are people who might learn skill, technique, may be able to, you know, sketch something out. But the reality is, for most of us, you could never even dream of having the work that flows out of you and onto the canvas come anywhere even near our world. So I'm super curious about how you not only made peace with this, but what it was like making peace with this and recognizing that as this artist, you do live in a sacred space and that you're the steward of this sacred space.
So one part of the answer there is that I a lot of times I'll hear people talk about artist block or writer's block, and that's really hard for me to understand. I've never had a moment where I didn't have so many ideas that I wish I had a crew of people help me execute these visions. I mean, I've recently taken to, I have this huge whiteboard in my studio, and I realized that I was, that's the curse of it though. They say that the worst, the most challenging thing to a great idea is another great idea, right? So we can push it and grab it, and then nothing gets done then though. And so it's like, and that's part of the curse of a creative, I would say. But so I had this whiteboard, and I was realizing I was really getting frustrated with my productivity. That's another thing that I've stopped saying. When people say, you know, how are you doing? It's like, busy. Oh, busy. Everybody's busy, but who cares if you're busy? If you're not productive, what the hell does busy matter? You know? So I've taken to saying that I'm productive, massively productive is what I'm going for versus just busy. But so I was looking at my whiteboard and realizing I have all these ideas, and it becomes suffocating because I look at it and I'm like, there's just not enough time in a day. There's just not enough time in a life to get this stuff done. So my whiteboard was all over the place, but I had these hooks on it so I can turn it around. And so what I've taken to doing is, one side I've turned into my idea side. and vision side, and the other side is my execution side. So on the idea side, I'm allowed to write anything I want, no holds barred, that's all good. But then, you know, I have to decide what moves over to the execution side, like what's good enough, what rises to the top. And so I'm trying to reframe the question or rethink. Can you ask me the question again? Because I think I kind of went off track a little bit.
It was a big question. It was a big Jennifer question. Can you talk about growing into recognizing, moving into, and becoming the steward of your sacred space?
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. I did go off a little bit there. It really kind of goes back to me saying that 8, 9, 10 years old, I knew that this was what I wanted to be. So for me, people always say, what would you say to what would the 10-year-old you think of the person you are now? And I think he would be like, yes, I knew it. that's like, there's not a lot of distance between my vision of what I wanted to be and where I am. The only thing that I'm still, the brass ring that I'm still chasing down, I guess, is just a little bit more comfortability in my daily life. Because when you're an artist, you know, the whole starting artist cliche is a curse. I don't think it's a romantic myth. I think it's a burden and a yoke for artists, and it should be shaken and dismantled and destroyed forever. but you know, all cliches exist for a reason. And I go through seasons as an artist where, you know, I don't punch a clock for anybody but myself. And sometimes you go through lean times when you're just not quite sure where that next sale is going to come from. And it's an existential anxiety, because you're like, well, how are my bills going to get paid? How is this going to, you know, how's the mortgage going to get done? How are the car payments? Where's the food coming from? And I would really like to get past that last little hurdle there. But outside of that, I do live the dream.
So talk a little bit about Web3, decentralization, digital art. You mentioned an NFT, which is a non-fungible token, which is a smart contract that lives on the blockchain that's usually represented by anything. It could be a physical piece of art. It could be an idea. It could be intellectual property. It could be a song. It could be a movie. It could be a toy. It could be anything. I'm waiting for the day when they start selling home runs out of Major League
there you go.
As an NFT and sell them in future seasons. And I'm going to bet that, you know, let's go back in time, but imagine being able to say, well, I want to go and buy 4 Ryan Sandberg home runs for the 2025 season, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And having that idea be that, you know, when he hits home runs number 1, 2, 3, and 4 that you bought the NFT for, you know, something wonderful happens. Now,
that's just a crazy
idea of what can happen in the space. But for artists, there's a moment that's happening right now in the blockchain world, in the cryptocurrency world for artists, where historically, if you sold a painting, you got paid for the painting. But if the painting went up in value and everybody prized your work and it went to Sotheby's and sold for $10 million, you don't get to benefit in any other way from that. The future of art is that these NFTs are going to allow the artist, you, to get paid in the future and finally recognize the artist's value, not merely in the moment of creation, but in the moment of commerce that gets created. And the commerce will live long after that one transactional relationship of the creative moment. I love this idea. And so can you talk a little bit about the blockchain, the crypto world, the metaverse, and and how this is going to change things for you as an artist?
Well, so the first thing to say is the way I actually got into this space is because, and I don't think I've even talked to you about this, from 2015 when I first got the idea. I was doing my music. I wasn't having a great season at the time. I needed to pay some bills, and my energy bill was come up, and I was like, I need $100, like $150 by like tomorrow. And I was like, what is that? What am I going to do? I wasn't working in with my art at the time. I was totally dedicated to my music. I wasn't drawing, painting, or anything. So I had done this illustration. Game of Thrones was coming out. I did this illustration of Tyrion Lannister. And I posted it on my Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat. And I said, look, I need 15 $10 donations. Once I get 15 donations, I'm going to randomly select somebody to win this original illustration. And the other, you know, 14 people are going to get a color print. I sold all 15 of them within like an hour.
Wow.
I'm meeting people in the Kmart parking lot for $10, like I'm freaking Walter White or something, right? So I'm like, I sat back and I said, wait a second, this is something. This is one of those things where you have that eureka moment and something just grabs you. And it set me off on a course for trying to create this platform from late 2015. 2016 is when I really started hammering down on it, but it's called Artunity. And so the idea is that Artunity creates the opportunity for you to donate to an artist for a chance to win a work of art. And the platform was basically going to look like Instagram meets GoFundMe with a Las Vegas twist, right? So I started creating this platform, and in my business plan in 2016, the reality was, I said, if a piece of artwork sells again inside of the Artunity platform, an artist for the first time in history will get a royalty from the payment from the platform itself. And that was before I even knew what an NFT was. So somebody had sent an article to me about NFTs giving royalty payments and said, wow, this sounds real familiar, doesn't it? And I was like, what the hell is going on? So that's when I like doubled down on NFTs, because it was something I already knew. It was something I was already trying to build in this platform. And I mean, I did some crazy stuff with it. I raised the first round of money to get the MVP built, but we ran out of money to get it exactly where I needed it to be. And then, you know, COVID hit, but I won People's Choice for Startup of the Year in New Orleans in 2019. And then I had another little win at a pitch competition early last year too. But then I just focused so much on my personal NFT journey and trying to understand the space and figure out how Artunity might eventually evolve into the NFT space. So that's something that I'm still on the back burner right now, but it's there.
Okay, that's fantastic. No, you haven't told me about this. I did a little digging around when I saw the word Artunity on some of the images that you have in your website, which is, I'm sure people want to know this, jjweinberg.com. It's really extraordinary to be able to talk to you about all of this. We've got about 5 minutes left in our conversation. Sure. This time has absolutely flown by. You and I have crossed paths in the metaverse. We work on a couple of projects together, one being Camp Kilmer with Val Kilmer. And of course, it makes perfect sense that you're Mark Twain with a paintbrush, because Val Kilmer is maybe most well known, besides Top Gun, for his portrayal of Mark Twain. So the synergies and the serendipities just keep aligning and demonstrating to me that you are somebody who is absolutely in the right place at the right time, doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. Can you talk a little bit about what you're working on right now and what's coming next?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am working on a piece. It's a kind of a triptych of sorts for Camp Kilmer, something that's going to be a collaborative effort with Val that pays homage to, you know, Val is a young man, Val is Doc Holliday, one of my favorites, and then of course Val is Mark Twain, his last speaking role, which was, like you said, is just absolutely impeccable. I wish I could have seen it live. I didn't, you know, get to see it. But the clips that I've seen of it on YouTube are just extraordinary. His performance is impeccable. But so that, of course, the Field of Dreams NFT is going to release on the 11th, just a few more days. It's up on Maker's Place right now, but it's not up. It's not available for purchase yet.
Let's tell everybody where that Maker's Place is, a platform that you can go and buy digital work. Can you buy it with a credit card, or do I need to buy some kind of crypto?
Yes, actually, no. That's actually why I chose to do it on Maker's Place for the most part, is because it's a very you don't have to be crypto savvy. You can use a credit card on Maker's Place. And the thing is, it's like I'm trying to shift the dialogue around this and what I think people should be doing in the NFT space in general, and stop talking about the NFT first. Like the NFT is just a tool. It's just a vehicle. So like for me, this Field of Dreams is the crystal statue. That's what the person's getting. They're getting it as an NFT record. That's their digital certificate of authenticity that will also, of course, make it that much more valuable to be able to show off on the blockchain and everything else. But like, it's really the moment and the crystal statue that you're getting, and the other little perks that come along with it, and less just the, you know, NFT. It's more than just a JPEG, is I guess what I'm saying in that regard. But so yeah, that's on Maker's Place. You can actually see it. It links on my website as well. In the featured work section, you can find a link to the NFT and the full description of like my relationship with my dad and why it was so transformative and healing and a moment of forgiveness in our relationship. Then of course my huge project from last year, and it's a really big part of my legacy too, is my Bob Ross project. I did this illustration in 2014 of Bob, and I had always wanted to do a coffee table book based off that illustration and call it Happy Little Hairdos. And the concept was just to take his face, but then give him a mohawk, give him cornrows and all of that. And then early last year, when I got into NFTs and heard about CryptoPunks, and I know I'm kind of talking in NFT language right now, but when I heard about the CryptoPunks, I started moving my Happy Little Hairdos idea to the front burner and, you know, creating this project where I could generate 10,000 random Bob Ross parody pictures. And I've got a whole metaverse built out for it. It's called FromoVille. You could actually go on a computer. You can go to FromoVille.com and you can jump in. You'll see parts of my legacy. You'll see like the NFT piece that I did for the George Lopez Foundation that made George cry when I gave it to him. You'll see the Field of Dreams. You'll see a newspaper article laying on the ground from when I got arrested for climbing on top of a gas station, singing a song protesting fossil fuel in 2008 and riding my bicycle to Washington, D.C. halfway across the country. You'll see all of that stuff. You'll see an homage to my dog, Francis. I am pretty certain that I am the first person to ever bury a dog in the metaverse. I have a little gravestone and a picture and a memorial to my dog, Francis, who is, you know, the impetus for me writing the book, Serendipity According to Francis, is the title of the book. And she's got a little marker in my metaverse. So if you go into FromoVille, you'll see my story being told, my music, my art, my imagination all over the place.
J.J. Weinberg, big hugs and thanks for being here and making this the very sacred space that it was today, just because it's the space we got to share with you. We've got about 10 seconds left. JJWeinberg.com is his website. Thank you to Max Tucci for the privilege of allowing me to sit in. And as Max says, I see you, I hear you, and you matter. Keep making art.